Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off-Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast for those who go or don't go to church, where we can meet and hear from those that have made their faith count. This podcast series is to encourage via conversation and not necessarily change your mind prior to listening. You can contact us as well by email, ogc@accessradio.biz, and please use this address as we're about to start a mailing list, which will then keep you informed of all the upcoming episodes and lots more. This address again is ogc@accessradio.biz. So please enjoy today's guest, who contracted encephalitis, which resulted in her becoming partially sighted and deaf at the tender age of 2 years of age. However, our guest developed a fondness for reading and years later graduated with a BA honours in English Literature and Education. Whilst at university, our guest became a Christian, having suffered massive depression. She also met her future ministry partner, gospel singer Marilyn Baker. Our guest has written 9 books, the most recent being Unashamed, Discover the Healing Power of God's Love for Your Wounded Soul. So, what's it like to be partially sighted and deaf? How do you cope? Was God blamed for this? What does she remember about her deep depression? Why write this book? And who is it for? All these questions. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to Off-Grid Christianity, Tracy Williamson. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us today. Where are we speaking to you from, please?
Hello, everyone. I'm lovely to be with you. Yes, I'm speaking from Hadlow in Kent, which is where I live. And it's a little village between Tunbridge Wells and Maidstone.
Lovely. Well, I have to say also, a big round of applause to all those people at Google and all those clever boffins around the world who have made this podcast available, because not only can I see you, but you can actually read what I'm actually saying to you via the closed caption system on Google Meet. Thank you to all those involved that I most probably will never meet, but it means that I can interview you without the aid of an interpreter, sign language, whatever. So it's great. I have 5 important questions for you.
Yes.
Let's see how we get on with this, if that's all right. Question 1. If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, alive or dead, so that you could ask them questions, who would it be?
I think it would have to be, for me, J.R.R. Tolkien. Because I actually did my dissertation on him when I was at college, and I had a fascination for The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and all that he wrote. And I would love to just be able to sit with him and ask him how he came to write such an amazing, not just a story, but to invent such a world as he did, Middle-earth, and all that it represents. So he would be the one.
That's a great answer. I totally agree. He would be a great person to discuss, especially as I have a thing about the Inklings, you know, the little group of people that would meet alongside C.S. Lewis, J.R. Tolkien and others in the pub, the Eagle and Child, isn't it, in Oxford, where they sit down and have a pint or two and discuss what they've written. I'd love to hear more about that. What do you remember about doing your dissertation on the Inklings?
Well, I only wrote it really on the books, and I actually did it on the conflict between good and evil in the world of J.R.R. Tolkien. And at the time, I'd only just become a Christian. And it was quite revelatory to me to realise that it was all about the overcoming of evil and how many Christ figures there were in the Lord of the Rings and different things like that. And but how real he made the characters. And so many of us are like Frodo in a way, and Bilbo too, kind of small characters feeling they were insignificant and they're trusted to do amazing things. And that's what really kind of touched me from those stories. And so I would like to bring those things out with him, find out what was really in his heart when he wrote them.
Any ideas what that might be?
Because I do believe that C.S. Lewis led Tolkien to know the Lord. Mm-hmm. And before he wrote those books, I do believe that he was kind of trying to transmit the kind of knowing of good and who good is and what is happening in our world. There are obviously political strands going into it as well. And some people read it just in that light. Now, what was literally going on in the world with the Second World War and everything like that. But really, I think there was a very profound spiritual message going on. And the characters that he chose, you know, like, as I said about Frodo and the hobbits, and they all had flaws, they all had weaknesses. And yet they'd be the ones that were entrusted and rose up themselves in their own decisions to choose to take the ring and to face the kind of evil forces of Mordor. And so in a sense, it seems that the way good calls us. I do believe, I mean, I may be wrong, but I do believe that was part of his motivation and in writing the story. But who knows, if he was sitting here, he might say something very different.
If I can organise it, whereby you have this meal with Mr. Tolkien, please ask him from me as to where did he get all those names from, like Bilbo Baggins and Mordor and everything else like that. I'd love to know the answer.
Yes, that's true. I would love to know those answers too. And even the elven tongue. That was amazing, really, wasn't it? How he conjured that up.
Yeah.
And Gandalf.
Yes.
I mean, are you a fan of Tolkien as well, then?
No. But I have seen the films, and I do live very close to areas here in Northern Ireland, because obviously, you know, C.S. Lewis would come around this area for his holidays when growing up. So I have more of an affinity with C.S. Lewis than Mr. Tolkien. But yes, he seems a fascinating character in himself. So hopefully I can organise that meal with you and Mr. Tolkien, and we can talk about it afterwards. Question two. Who is your favourite biblical character or favourite biblical story or favourite parable, please, Tracy?
That's a hard one to choose because there's so many. One that I often find myself sharing about, and I've included a story from in my new book, Unashamed, is Zacchaeus. He is a character in Luke, chapter 19, I think it is, when Jesus is on his way to Jericho. And Zacchaeus, it tells this story, was a man that was hated by the other Israelites because he was a tax collector and had kind of betrayed them and was stealing money from them on top of being a tax collector. He would demand a lot more money than was his due.
Mm.
And so there was a sense of betrayal and a sense that he wasn't, although he was a Jew, that he wasn't part of that community because of the choices he'd made. And so he hid himself in a tree. He was also short. Being short isn't a disability, of course, but it is something that can mark us out as being different. But he hid in this tree, and of course, if you know the story, it's lovely because there he was, hated by everyone.
Yes.
Longing to see Jesus. But Jesus stopped under the tree and called him out and called him by name and said that he wanted to eat with him, be with him in his home. I always find that amazing, so real, really. A real expression of love and reaching out from Jesus. And of course, it changed the case. I'm probably talking too long here, Ben.
That was brilliant. Great answer. Thank you. I don't think I've ever had Zacchaeus before. So it's nice to have that. Thank you. Question three. If you were Prime Minister for the day, Tracy, and could change any law or impose a new law, what would it be?
This one, I must say, I'm not politically minded to the slightest degree.
We can have a frivolous answer. I'm all in favour of frivolous answers.
It's a frivolously serious answer, in a way. I think that as I have disabilities, and as it often seems that those who are in the most powerful position don't always understand or seem to understand.
Yes.
Those who have weaknesses in any form. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I would make it a law. that anyone coming into a ministerial position would need to have some kind of disability or weakness, or have someone very close to them in their family that did have that. And then out of that, I think, would come that understanding. Of course, that could never be, because you become a minister for different reasons, for your own natural ability. But that is my frivolously serious answer.
I think that's a very good answer. Question 4, outside of family events, what has been your most enjoyable day out so far, please?
Again, that could be a huge number of things, but in my work with Marilyn Baker, I've travelled a lot. And before COVID, we used to travel to different countries.
Mm.
One day we were in Kenya, and we went to visit this family that lived in a rural area, a poor family. And so we had to bounce in the van that we were ministering in, or from rather, going to the different locations in. And none of the roads were proper roads. They were like dirt tracks.
Yes.
So we would bounce over the potholes. And then we came to a point where the van couldn't go anymore. And so we all got out the van. And we had to cross over the kind of plain and a bit through the jungle. And Marilyn was being guided. I had more sight then. I didn't need guiding, but I am very unsteady. So I was being guided as well. And we came to this river and had to cross over on stepping stones. And so we went across there. And halfway across, they told us that there were crocodiles. Yeah. They'd come prepared, and so they had saucepans and lids. And they banged them together to scare the crocodiles off. I must admit, I was more scared.
Wow.
I wasn't convinced that saucepan would send the crocodiles away.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing experience. And then we got to the house in the end, and we weren't eaten. We got to the house, and they cooked a meal for us. With the women cooking it over an open fire in the outside kitchen, which was just a little clay, adjoined bit to the main hut. And all the smoke and everything pouring into their faces and their house.
Yeah.
But it was amazing, and they put so much love into it. Really humbling and really beautiful. And an experience I wouldn't have missed, really.
That was absolutely brilliant. And how many crocodiles did you actually see whilst they were banging the saucepans?
Well, I actually didn't see any. But that doesn't mean that they weren't near, because
no.
With my sight, I don't distinguish easily. Say a shadow under the water, that might be a crocodile. I would just see it as a blur of the water.
Gotcha.
But they assured me that they were there.
Oh, wow. What a day that would have been. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Question 5, then. What has been your most embarrassing moment to date, please, Tracy?
There again, there's lots of embarrassing moments. When I first joined Marilyn, we used to do a lot of what was called Christian viewpoint meetings. Mm-hmm. And they were meetings often led by quite well-to-do Christian leaders. And they would be evangelistic meetings, often with a breakfast or a lunch, followed by Marilyn singing and me sharing my testimony or something.
Yes.
At that time, I was coming out of my background and many deep hurts. And I had a real fear of not matching up. So anyway, at this breakfast before Marilyn sang, Marilyn happened to drop her nectarine and it rolled down her front. She was wearing a plain top and the trail of juice down her front was really obvious. So I dipped my serviette in a jug that had just been brought up. And the lady that brought it up had spoken to me, which of course I couldn't hear. But I thought she said, "This is the water for my Marilyn is singing." It was in a pottery jug, not a glass jug. So I dipped my serviette in and scrubbed Marilyn's dress with it. And then this lady said in a very posh, upset voice, "Oh, that was the milk for our coffee." And I was so embarrassed. It was me trying to look a bit posh and well to do.
Oh.
And as if I had everything together. And as Maren's personal assistant.
Yeah.
Turns out as if I was in control, and there I am scrubbing her with milk as well as juice.
Oh, no.
Yeah, to explain it, as well as being deaf, that I couldn't see that well either. But
I bet when you had explained it, that very nice but posh lady felt offended for your benefit and felt sorry and everything else. Did she not?
I'm sure she did. Yeah. She was a lovely lady, really. It was just me getting a bit embarrassed when I didn't have been.
Yes.
There's plenty of times like that.
Yes. But of course, the big question that arises from this, did the milk take out the stain?
Well, I think what actually happened was we delayed the start of the concert a bit. I rushed Marilyn out to the ladies and we got towels out of the towel hut, the towel and paper thing holder. I scrubbed her dress with that. So then she had water as well as milk, as well as juice. And so then I tried to make her bend backwards into the dryer as well, which was there. But everyone had a laugh in the end.
Yes.
We all understood.
I think that's the only time you could most probably say for Marilyn, this was the time when she milked the applause.
Right, yes. That's a very good phrase, yes.
You could use it for your next book.
Yes, that's right.
Milking the applause. Thank you very much indeed for sharing that, Tracy. Just go further into, if that's okay, what it's like to be partially sighted and deaf. From your point of view, how partially sighted are you, please? And what have you actually got?
I've recently been registered as severely sight impaired. Mm-hmm. And so, in effect, that means that my sight has deteriorated a bit. But both my sight and hearing loss come from encephalitis when I was 2. And the effect of that wasn't directly to the eyes and ears, but to the brain. And so for me, I don't have portions of my sight missing like many partially sighted people do. Like some who are partially sighted can't see to the side at all.
Mm-hmm.
They can only see an arrow lying in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or conversely, they might only be able to see things on either side and nothing in front. Or it might all be blurry. And I can see all round. I can't see the detail. And so it used to be that I wasn't able to drive. I've never driven. And I wasn't able to kind of do things like read a map. But I could read any print. But now, since the sight has deteriorated, actually deteriorating more with the eyes as well as with the brain function, I cannot read print so easily. I can read giant print, which is what the captions are coming up on the screen. They're about font size 30 coming up. But anything of a normal font size, I can't read. Mm-hmm. I can't lip read because I can't see what the lips are doing. And in fact, now that I've deteriorated more, I can't generally see the people's mouths moving at all. So from a few feet away, I can't really tell who a person is.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I've already seen them quite close up. And then that they're wearing, for example, a red jumper. But if I've just gone in a room and sit down, and someone's sitting more than, say, 2 or 3 feet away, then I wouldn't necessarily recognise them. And so there's some of the things for me.
Thank you for sharing that. I would love to know how you learnt to read then, because your English, the way you speak to me, is really clear, is eloquent. I can understand everything you say. So how did you get to learn to be where you are as far as your vocab is concerned today?
That I'm not quite sure of, because I think it might have been slightly a miracle.
Mm.
But one thing is that with my sight, my hearing wasn't so bad right at the beginning. And again, it's a neurological cause. So unlike many people who are partially deaf or deaf, I do hear quite a lot. I can hear, say, if you drop something on the floor, I would hear the noise of it often.
Okay.
And yet, last week we were at a conference and the fire alarm went off and I didn't hear that. And in fact, I was in the room on my own because Marilyn was out, taking her cat dog out with another friend. And I was in the room preparing and for what we were going to share. And I didn't know the fire alarm had gone off. It was a real alarm, but it wasn't a real fire. Something that had gone into the system. So that was a very loud noise, but the reason I couldn't hear it was because the brain didn't interpret it as an alarm. And so when I hear speech, the brain doesn't interpret the speech correctly. So in effect, although I do hear all sorts of different noises, because I can't really interpret what they are, then I'm the same as being profoundly deaf now and can't understand speech at all, hardly. If you were sitting here, I wouldn't know what you were saying. So here I picked up vocabulary. It was always that case that I couldn't really understand, but it wasn't quite so bad. Earlier on, I moved from being that hard of hearing to partially deaf. To now, this level that I'm at now. But I did always have reading. And somehow I think I probably got some of my vocabulary from there. I don't always know how to pronounce words, though. And so sometimes I pronounce them phonetically. For an example, I used to call Thailand Thailand because that was how it looked.
Yes.
So friends lovingly or sometimes laughingly tell me if I've made a bit of the phrase faux pas.
Faux pas. I was just going to say faux pas.
Yes.
I always remember at UCB, my early days. In fact, I think probably the first day I went on air, somebody very kindly phoned in. And the note passed me said they were from a place called Dunlehere, because that's what I thought it was. It was actually Dunleary. Yes, I do understand how difficult it can be trying to say what you think the word is. But you're doing brilliantly. Thank you so much. Now that we've got an understanding of this, if we could maybe bring God into all this, because I would have thought quite a lot of people, Tracy, would say, how can you love God? You know, this is obviously his fault. You know, if he loved you, he would heal you, sort of thing. So what would you say to people?
I became a Christian when I was 18. And at the time, there were much bigger issues in my heart than the fact that I'm deaf and visually impaired. And you could say the same for any issue that we're going through. Why does God let us go through things? Why does God let us suffer? Mm-hmm. And I've had prayer for healing many times. And early on in my Christian life, I was part of a charismatic church. And there was a word from God one night in a prayer meeting that God wanted to bring healing into the whole community, not just the church. But I was the only obviously disabled person in the church at the time. So they felt they needed to start within the congregation to see God bring miracles. And they prayed for me, which was lovely. But they went on and on praying for me. They prayed for over 2 hours. And in the end, when I hadn't been healed, one of the elders was saying, you need to have more faith. And if you can't get that faith up and let God heal you, then he won't be able to use you as a deaf person.
What?
At this point, I'd only been a Christian for about 2 or 3 months. And I thought what the leader said was absolute truth. And so I was very shocked. And it was like an arrow going into my newfound faith. And that did make me doubt God's love, because it was the sort of thing I'd always heard about myself anyway. And that didn't match up, that I was rubbish, things like that. So it was good just the same. That is a huge story and too long to share in this answer, but the answer I have come to is that God's love is so much bigger. And even when we don't understand things, and there's a mystery as to why we're not healed or why we go through things, that Jesus took all the struggle and all the pain on the cross, and that God's love is bigger than those things. We can experience his love even in the midst of being unhealed or of going through tough times. And that's what I found.
Wonderful. If I had a time machine, Tracy, and we could go back to that meeting all those years ago when the elder or whatever his job title was told you that, you know, your faith isn't strong enough. And we go back now to see him when you were that young girl, well, 18-year-old, 19-year-old. What would you say to that person now, do you think, at that meeting?
I might say the type of saying, Dad, I don't want to be argumentative, but I know that you're wrong. And I only have to have a tiny faith in that God could heal me in a moment. But that if I could look into the future, I might say that God is going to use me. And of course, with hindsight now, all these years later, then God has used me and I'm now much more deaf and more disabled than I was then. So following the elder's logic, I wouldn't be usable in any way whatsoever. And yet here I am with 40-odd years of being used as a Christian in quite powerful ways and seeing lives changed. So if I could speak in that kind of forward view to the elder while travelling back in the machine, that's what I would say.
I think if I was with you, you would have to pull me back into the machine very quickly. I would be very annoyed. And in Christian love, I'd have to have a very polite word with him.
Yes. Well, I might have wanted to give him a thump as well.
I did mention at the beginning, and you've mentioned it as well, and I'm aware of how many people do suffer with severe depression within that genre. You mentioned it, that, you know, you were going through a really tough time. What do you remember about that time? How would you describe what it was like to feel, you know, under severe depression?
This was when I first got to college. Mm-hmm. And I'd come out of an abusive home life. My stepfather was abusing me and I'd buried everything that was going on and my reaction to it, because I'd learned early on that if I reacted, if I showed fear or upset, then it would make him more powerful. And so that was together with what was going on at school, because in fact, my deafness hadn't been recognised until I was 12. So all through my primary years, I was thought to be slow learning. And so the two things together, I mean, my stepfather was sexually abusive, but he was also verbally abusive. So it would be like screaming over me that I was rubbish and unlovable and shouldn't have been born and mental, lots of different things. And in the end, I came to believe them because it seemed to be confirmed at school and school seemed to be confirmed at home. And so those were the roots of the depression. I didn't even know myself until 12 that I was deaf. And once I did know, it still didn't alter the fact that I felt I was stupid because that belief had gone so deep. And so when I got to college, I'd hoped that I could kind of throw all that off, leave it behind in London where I was brought up, and be a new person. I had a picture in my mind of the kind of person I wanted to be. I wanted to be a fun-loving person, the centre of a crowd. Someone that would reach out to others. I wanted to be a teacher, and then a teacher with the deaf. And so college was tough because I hadn't realised how difficult the hearing would be, not to managing lectures and the kind of interactive nature of lectures, and to go into schools that can understand the children. And so then it seemed after I got there, that all the buried things started coming out. And I felt there was no way forward, even getting drunk in student bar didn't do anything. So I felt the only answer was to die. So I did try. And I share how I tried and unashamed. I didn't succeed. And so that was another kind of knock, as it were, because that's what I wanted to. I felt I'd failed it yet one more thing. I couldn't even kill myself. And so it was very tough. The kind of bleakness of heart and the sense of desolation. But I do share how God brought me out of it.
Thank you. We will get to Unashamed, I promise you. if we got back in my time machine again, let's say, and we go back to that time when you were really, really feeling it, suicide thoughts, the abusiveness of your stepdad, your family life. If we could go back now, what would you say to A, yourself, and B, the abusive parent?
To myself, I would say, stop listening to all he said, because there's so many true things that you need to hear about yourself. Birds that are life-giving, birds that are in God's heart for you, that are absolutely true. And as you listen to those words and take them in, then the power of all those other ugly, demeaning, crippling words will be undone. And I would tell myself to look for the glimmer of hope, that it's God's love for you, and to take hold of that. Because once you've got hold of it, it will hold you forever and will draw you out into a new place.
Yeah.
And I would tell my stepfather that you thought that you were so great and so strong, but that you were nothing and you were living a lie and speaking a lie. And your strength came from demeaning and controlling those who you saw as weak. But that God sees the weak as being mightily strong, and I am mightily strong, and you have nothing over me.
Wow. Were you ever able to say that to him?
Not in this life, no.
No.
13 years ago he passed away. You weren't ever able to have a conversation with him, because he would just shout and rant. But maybe God was able to communicate it to him. So I have to leave that in God's hands, really. But in my heart, in my spirit, I have said those things to him, and I've been going through a healing process that Jesus has taken me through.
Yeah.
So that's been quite a powerful thing, really, but just not face to face.
Yeah. Gracie, thank you for your honesty so far. I feel very humbled in what you're sharing. And as you are aware of these podcasts that I do for Off-Grid Christianity, I want them to be an encouragement, especially to those that are feeling really, really down, really holding on to God by their fingertips. And you've made your faith count. For those that are listening at the moment and saying, I really get what you're saying, Tracy, but I've really had enough myself, and I'm really struggling to cope with the pressures of maybe abusive family member, maybe a disability, whatever, and I can't really talk to God at the moment. What would you say?
I think what I would say now for you and for all feeling that is that when we can't really talk to God, that God is still there. And when we feel we're at an absolute end of ourselves, and that we doubt even if God exists, or if he does exist, if he really is love, is he even the opposite? Is he a sadist to allow these things to happen? Then he is big enough to take those questions. We can't shock him or disappoint him by doubts or inability to kind of dance around in worship, or even say his name. His love is unending, and he will be there for you. And he knows how to hold you and anyone that's listening to this through this time, and to bring you through it. He knows how to bring things to pass that will enable your faith to rise again. He's brought people in my life. And at that point when I tried to take my life and I felt that everything had ended and I had no more hope, he caused a girl in the Christian Union to actually know that she needed to seek me out and to talk to me about God and to tell me that he was a father and would love me forever. And that to me was an incredible thing. because how did she know? She didn't know anything about my background. But God knew and he put it on her heart. And that was where my Christian journey began. And it's not just that we need him to begin that Christian journey in us. We may be well in it, but have plunged right down into the depths because of what you said, the inability to cope, the things going on. But his compassion and his understanding are huge. So I would say just know that he is there. And even if you can't really know that in a sense of joy filling your emotions or it being a coherent thought, nevertheless, he is there. That's all I can say.
Yes.
And he loves you and he understands and he cares. And in that understanding, love and care, he will bring you through.
Tracy, thank you. When you were really going through it then and you had just become a Christian, what do you remember clearly that God did for you at that time to just get you out of the mire and go for it?
One thing that the girl that I mentioned, who was called Ruth, she had said to me that if you can just open your heart to the love of Jesus, then it won't just be that you'll get to heaven and find God there, but that you will find him here in this life. And she said, you believe and find him starting to change you and heal any hurts you've had. She was saying this not knowing still, because I didn't tell people then. Mm-hmm. But after I'd prayed to put my life in his hands, which wasn't with her, it was a few weeks later. But I didn't see that change happening, not straight away. And in fact, things started to get worse because it was almost as if I would start going to a church or into the Christian Union meetings and everyone seemed so happy.
Yeah.
And yet all I was feeling was increasing pain inside and a sense of deep shame that was coming from the abuse. And it was all coming up into my consciousness from where I'd buried it. And I couldn't see that change happening and I was beginning to wonder if I made a mistake and believed in something that wasn't real.
Yes.
And one day someone made a kind of negative remark in the dining room and it was kind of like lighting a fuse. And I blew up. And this massive kind of tidal wave of anger overcame me. And I kind of roared and pushed my tray away and ran out of the dining room and ran away from college. And I ran about 25 miles and I was furious.
Wow.
And wow. Shouting at God, swearing at him, saying I believed in you and you were fake like everything else. And I should never have trusted you. And I knew I couldn't go back to college because that was where I'd believed. And my hope had died in that role that I was in. So I just ran and ran and walked and walked. And in the end, it was really late in the evening and there was a storm. And on dramatic films, there's always a storm. Thunder, lightning, pouring rain, pitch dark. And I got into this bus shelter and collapsed on the seat. And a voice spoke to me and it said, I love you and want to be a father to you. And I was so shocked. And it was an audible voice, and I jumped up and looked around. Who's there? And I realised there wasn't anyone there. It was a deserted country road, gone half past 10 at night. And there wasn't anyone around. And besides, if there had been, I wouldn't have heard them.
Mm-hmm.
And I realised it wasn't a person, but that it was God. And that he had run those 25 miles with me, as it were. And had been saying, you're a fake, and swearing at him. Terrible words. But he was saying, I love you. I want to be a father to you. And it kind of stopped me in my tracks. And I collapsed back down on the bench. And then he began to communicate to me. No more in an audible voice, but just in whispers passing across my kind of consciousness. And he was saying that already, although I hadn't been a Christian long, I'd fallen into the trap of just doing the Christian things, like going along to a church, reading certain parts of the Bible every day, different things like that, praying and prayer meetings. But he said, it's relationship, that's what it's all about. I want you to know me as your good father, a father who cares. And a good father wants to be alongside their child. He said, I want to be alongside you when you're happy and sharing that happiness. I want to be alongside you when you're sad to comfort you. I want to be there for you and for you to know that. And so that was the beginning, the very kind of slight movement of me turning round and starting to step into not Christianity for things that you have to do, but Christianity as a relationship with someone that loves me.
Wow. Well, I have to ask, how did you get back to college and what happened next when you walked into college?
Well, how I got back was actually part of that story and was a miracle, because we said already that I'm sight impaired. And one thing is, in the dark, even then when my sight wasn't so bad, that the dark makes it decrease drastically. And so I can't really see and couldn't see then either where I was going. And in the pouring rain with lights reflecting off the road, then I couldn't know my way back. I'd run away blindly. I had no idea where I was. I was actually near an area called Slough.
Yes. Wow.
Which was quite a long way from Aldenham, where the college was in Hertfordshire. But so I said to the Lord, I've no idea how to get back. I thought that he wanted me to go back initially to a couple. Not straight to college, but to a couple that I'd met once in the church that I'd just gone to a couple of times. And so I said, I don't know how to get there, Lord. If you really are my father, you'll have to help me. So I set off walking, and I was just going back along that road, and suddenly lights came past me as if a big vehicle was coming along. And I looked round, and to my surprise, a bus was coming. And so I did stick out my hand, but I wasn't anywhere near a bus stop. And amazingly, it did stop. Then I got on the bus. I remember that they lived in a place called the Meriden Estates. So I asked for the Meriden Estates. Now, when I'd run off, I hadn't gone back to my college room to pack a bag or get any proper money. I only had a little pouch with some change. And when I asked for the fare, it was exactly the change I had, which in that day was quite low compared to today. It was 82p, and that to the penny was all I had. So then I sat down, and I was so tired, I was kind of exhausted and fell asleep. And I woke up with a start, looked out the window, could only see my face staring back in the black glass. So I shouted to the driver, where is the Meriden Estates? And he said, don't worry, it's next stop. So I got off, and it was a junction, and there were roads in all directions, shining lights, traffic. I said, Lord, you've got me here. Please help me find their house. And I set off walking. And as I was going down this road, something made me stop at the end of a drive. The houses all looked exactly the same, because it was like an estate. But I went up to that front door. It was now about 12:30 at night. Everyone was in bed. I knocked on the door, and the husband opened it. And it was just so kind of amazing. I still feel kind of emotional about it now. It just brought me in. And he answered so lovingly, and he called his wife, and she did too. They were called John and Amanda, and they didn't start asking for explanations or anything. They just seemed to understand that I needed love. So they wrapped me in a blanket made me hot drinks, got their son out of his bedroom and made the bed, extra warm for me, hot water bottles, and just loved me. And then it was after that that they became really like, but they weren't that much older than me, but almost like a surrogate mum and dad, and welcomed me into their family. And that was the beginning of me seeing that God's love was really there for me, really real.
Wow. It's amazing, isn't it, that you got on that bus, the bus stopped, you got off, the first house you go to is the very house that you wanted.
Yes. It was like a Bible story, really.
No, it is. Well, talking of Bible stories, one of the great stories from the Old Testament is Ruth. You mentioned Ruth from going to college, and she was the one that was able to take that step and say what she did, which is incredible, because I doubt if most people could do that nowadays. Do you know whatever happened to Ruth?
Yes, incredibly. Ruth is actually in the same church as me now. And the incredible thing, I mean, I live in Kent, as I've said.
Yeah.
And Ruth was originally from Kent, but her college was in Hertfordshire. And when she first left college, she lived in London with her husband and was teaching in Peckham. And so our lives went in completely different directions. But some years ago, maybe 20 years ago or so, she moved back to Kent because her parents were there. But the staggering thing is that I actually go to a very tiny church. We only have at maximum about 20 members.
Wow.
It's like a little house church, really. And so of all the churches that we could have ended up being together again, it's staggering that we're in the same one.
Wow.
And she's an incredible person.
I would love to know, if Ruth was here now in the conversation, what she would say about what happened that night when she went to you and spoke into you, and what she would remember of that. Have you any idea what she would say?
Yes, because we've discussed it quite a few times.
I thought you might.
And so she is just so utterly thankful that she followed that prompting, because really at the time she had no idea, and she didn't know why she should talk to me in that way. But it was like an urgency in her heart. And she was so thankful when we shared together that she did. And so kind of believing and supportive of who I am as a person. And that is a wonderful thing. And I think it brought her tremendous encouragement in her own life that prompting that she acted on had such a dynamic and life-changing effect on someone else, on me.
Wow. Let's talk about the book, if that's okay. I mean, first of all, I love the cover. It's got butterflies, but you think there might be leaves, hundreds of them on the cover, in a really nice sort of yellowy, golden, wheaty coloured, with like a navy blue, royal blue, navy blue background. So the gold and the brown really stands out. It is a beautiful cover. Unashamed is the book. It says on the front, A Toolbox for Transformation by Carol Bostock, Beauty from Ashes. Discover the healing power of God's love for your wounded soul. As I said, the title's called Unashamed. Great title for a book. Why, though, Tracy, did you write it?
I wrote it and felt a longing for the many, many broken people that I meet. So many have experienced the kind of agony, if that's not too strong a word,
mm-hmm.
A feeling that they're a mistake, unwanted, not matching up, or the pain and devastation of being abused, or just struggling in life because of disabilities, and maybe feeling a disappointment to their families because of those things. Marilyn experienced that a lot herself, mm-hmm. from her father because of being totally blind. And since becoming a Christian, it was as if God had taken me on a healing journey. And I've gone through many steps, needing to, for example, really take hold of his words of truth about me and to consciously and deliberately choose to let go of all those negatives, some of which I've told you that my stepfather would shout and that I came to believe. And this step seems so important. And I felt a longing, a passion almost from God's heart. The people know that they were beautiful in his eyes, that they were meant to be, that no one could possibly be a mistake, because they were in God's plan right from the beginning. Even rape victims, they've had a child because of a rape. You may say, how could that child be in God's plan? But God is bigger. And he knew about that child. And no one is a mistake in his eyes. And I felt this passion to kind of share God's heart and some of the steps that I've been through to reach that place. I'm not saying I'm all there, but I'm on that journey, definitely. And to communicate it to others who feel hopeless. So that's where it came from, really.
That is fantastic. How did you actually go about writing it then, when you've got your disability, as far as your eyesight is concerned, and deafness? How did you go about writing it?
I write on a big PC, which not so many do nowadays. But it's no huge monitor, because it has to sit on my desk. I have to be able to be close into it. It's about 6 inches away from me now. And so I have it set up for a partially sighted person with large fonts and everything like that. And I have a special keyboard that I buy from the RNIB that's got giant size letters on the keys. I don't touch type because I never learned to type at school. So I make lots of mistakes and I go back over and rewrite them. But I also type in a large font. When I send things off, I change it and put it in a normal font. And so from a natural sense of how I came to write it, I would kind of listen to God to think what things he wanted me to share. And I would look at myself as well, who I am as a person. So for example, I'm not academic. If I read books, I found it quite hard to read books that are teaching from start to finish. Intellectual books, because I'm not intellectual and I often can't get concepts. And so I like to write as I like to read. So my books, and Ashamed and all the others as well, I wrote in a sense of being teaching points that have mattered to me, followed by story, personal illustration or other people's stories or Bible character stories, even some fictional stories from nature. Are in and ashamed, followed by points of reflection where people can listen and reflect on those things I've shared, and often including two prophetic words that the Lord gave me as I was writing for the readers that would come. That's how it came about, really.
I always like looking at the back first before reading a book, just to see, you know, what extra notes might be in there, the bibliography in particular, because that will give me an understanding of who this person is. The first names that I read, Frank Peretti, that stood out to me massively, because when I became that reluctant Christian in the late 1980s, I would read books. And Frank Peretti wrote This Present Darkness and Piercing the Darkness, which had a massive effect on me. So what does Frank Peretti mean to you then? Why is he in the book?
That's a chapter in the book about spiritual warfare. And I need to be kind of released. And it's the power of Satan over us in different areas. And so now things like strongholds and spiritual attack, demonization, as it were, for things like rejection and abuse, and very powerful to hold us in bondage. When I first became a Christian, it was around that same period that you did, in the 80s.
Yeah.
When Frank Peretti's books were all coming out, weren't they?
Yeah.
And it was that kind of dynamic to me about the spiritual realm, the satanic forces are doing and how we can overcome them. And that's why I shared it in the bibliography, because I thought he brings it so alive, those books. Not only what the satanic world is doing, but how we can overcome it through prayer. It was very eye-opening, wasn't it, their stories.
That's the book, Unashamed. It's published by Authentic Media. I really do wish you well with the success of this book. And people should buy it just for the cover. That's how good it is, I think. And I'm looking at the time as well, Tracy. I mean, we've been going on and on and on, and it's gone as if it was only 5 minutes ago that we started about crocodiles. So it just remains for me to say, Tracy, that's all right. Your Christian hero, this is how we end every podcast with. So, Tracy Williamson, star of great books and more to come, no doubt, and hopefully she'll write a book, which the title will be 82p, because I think that's what it should be called. Who is your Christian hero, please?
Now, I think my Christian hero is someone who died quite recently, in the last couple of years. And it's the Christian writer and speaker called Jennifer Rees-Loccom. And she has had a huge impact on me, and in many, many different ways. The first thing that bonded me to Jen was the fact that she had had the very same illness that I had, encephalitis. And she was in a wheelchair with terrible pain and mobility problems and great exhaustion and different things because of her condition. Amazingly, she did experience a dramatic healing that was definitely a miracle. And she was released from that wheelchair in a moment when someone prayed. That was before we actually knew her. And then Marilyn and I came to know her. And it turned out that when Jen was so ill in hospital with her illness, Marilyn's tapes, which they bear at the time, had been a great source of encouragement to Jen. But that at that time, Marilyn herself was being encouraged by Jen, because Marilyn had a time when she was severely ill with back trouble and could hardly work and had to give up the ministry for a period. And Jen had written a book called Beyond Healing, all about God's grace when you're sick and God doesn't heal you. And that had so impacted and helped Marilyn. So unknown to each other, they were greatly encouraging one another.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we all became friends, and Jen and her husband invited us to start to do things with them after she was healed. And as a person, as I got to know her, she had such an impact on me. The way she loved people. Everyone was important. She would go out the door and watch people going away when they'd been with her. And that sense of them mattering until even they were out of sight. And singling people out. It all kind of touched my heart greatly. And she believed in me as a writer. I loved her books so much. But it was through her that I actually started writing. And she submitted an article that I wrote to a magazine for me, but also to Hodders, who were her publishers. And through that, the doorway to me becoming a writer was opened. And so her ministry has been so incredible. She's had severe pain. She did experience that healing. But that was healing of encephalitis, and after that she had pain in many other ways. She experienced many family problems and brokenness, and her own marriage breaking down in her deep betrayal. And yet, she stayed loving the Lord, she stayed ministering, she stayed reaching out, even till the days before she died a couple of years ago. And so, she will always be my hero.
That's a great answer, and you dedicated this book, Unashamed, to Jennifer. So I'm not at all surprised you chose her, I must admit. But what you don't know is that a podcast that hasn't been released yet, obviously when people hear this one, it will be, the guest actually chose as his Christian hero. It was either Jennifer Rees-Loccom's father or grandfather as his Christian hero.
Yes. Was it Tom Rees?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Her father.
And for those that don't know who Tom Rees was, who was he? What do you know about him as well?
He was a great evangelist. And him and his wife both were, and he led many hundreds and thousands to the Lord. I don't know a great deal about his ministry because I was after that time, as it were. But I know that he was very dynamic and very, very used by God. And so Jen grew up in that atmosphere of parents who were in Christian ministry, which in many ways was wonderful, but in many ways was hard as well.
Yes.
But yes, I can imagine Tom Reeves being a real hero for someone.
Tracy, I am going to let you go now. Thank you ever so much for what you shared. It's been incredible. I thank you for your honesty. I thank you for your kindness, for what you shared. And if anybody has been touched by what they've heard today, especially if they're going through similar or, you know, alternative things that are really hurting them at the moment and would like to know more and maybe get hold of you, how can they do that, Tracy?
The best way is to contact our charity, which is called MBM Trust, www.mbm-ministries.org, or email info@mbm-ministries.org. And then anything from there would come to me personally.
What I'll do as well is I'll put the website address on the blurb at the front of every podcast so that people can get hold of you as well on that way.
Can I just say, actually, that in MBM we do regular Zoom conferences, and we will be starting soon to do an online course on Unashamed that will last a few weeks. And we also offer Marilyn and I prayer ministry for people who have all sorts of brokenness. If they live close enough, they can come to the house. But if they don't, then we do it by Zoom, just so that people can know that this is an option.
Wonderful. Tracy, thank you so much. And I hope we can keep in touch for many years to come. It's been an amazing time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Cheers. God bless.
And thank you too. It's been a real privilege and very humbling to be with you.
Tracy, thank you so much. God bless.